Do you have learners who are beyond the basics yet still struggle with language and comprehension? Has your learner outgrown all your usual assessments? And how do you program for someone who is more complex than you were taught during your ABA supervision? We get these questions on a regular basis. So we're going to do a 3-hour workshop on this exact topic in person at ABAI. If you're going to ABAI this year in Philadelphia, come join us on Thursday, May 23rd from 4 to 7 p.m. when we discuss beyond rote responding, programming for the intermediate to advanced learner. Look for workshop number 6 in your program book or follow the link in this podcast. Sign up ahead of time so you don't miss out. You will also earn 3 ACE Learning CEUs.
Hi, I'm Shira Karpow.
And I'm Shayna Gaunt, and we're board-certified behavior analysts. At How-To ABA, we provide practical resources, community, and support to ABA professionals. In each episode of our podcast, we will be having real conversations with real people sharing real stories about ABA.
We'll share relevant strategies and actionable tips that will make us all better ABA practitioners. It's the ABA content you need that you're not going to learn in a textbook.
It goes without saying that parents are the experts on their child, but one of the most common questions we get asked is about parent training. So, what are the best ways to include parent coaching in your practice? So a very long time ago, when my kids were still not yet in school, they were very little, I was a teacher. I taught in preschool, and I used to send things home with my students, whether it was notes or a lunch that they didn't eat or something that I felt was really important. And some students would come back the next day with the same note, the same homework, the same lunch from the day before. And I remember being like flabbergasted, like, how could a parent not check their kid's bag at the end of the day? And I thought I would never be that parent. Like, it's so important to know what the teacher is going to send home from school. Lo and behold, having 3 kids in school at the same time, a busy life, I became that parent and my kids started coming home and I don't remember the last time I checked their backpack. So I think that's a lesson for all of us. And I think it comes up a lot when we talk about parent coaching.
For sure. I mean, sometimes I think about parents and I think, oh, why didn't they just follow through with that? Like, it was just something so easy. And we have to remember as professionals that we need to take the perspective of parents and go, oh, yeah, like busy lifestyle beyond belief, right? And sometimes it's not necessarily that, they just don't do it. It's the fact that maybe they can't do it. They don't know how to do it, or they try, but there's only so many hours in a day. And, they've got to manage so many other things in their household that they just can't do that one more thing that you want them to do.
Remember, we went to school for many years to learn a lot of these concepts. And a lot of the parents we work with didn't. This is new to them. They didn't ask for this. And so we have to keep that in mind when we are talking to parents, that this is not their career. Like, we chose this. And so we have to make it really simple and really doable.
Absolutely. Speak in layman's terms. And we really want to slow down our rate of speech. And we want to define the concepts over and over again, show lots and lots and lots of examples, because they're learning. Pretend they're a student and they're learning. And sometimes they're scared to ask questions. So they may not understand something, but maybe they're scared because they don't, for whatever reason, they don't feel comfortable asking you, or they don't want to sound like they're, that they don't know this stuff. So they just nod and say, yes, okay, when they really don't. So making sure that, you check in often and review concepts often.
And remember, our goal is not to turn parents into like mini behavior analysts or even ABA therapists. We have very different objectives when we are working with parents as when we might be supervising an ABA therapist or a program. Those wouldn't be the same thing unless parents are really gung-ho and want to start generalizing some of the stuff that they're working on in their program. We would start with something very different. The first thing that you would need to start with is really having a conversation with parents and finding out what's working for them and what's not working for them. And also knowing that we as parents all run our houses very differently. I remember when my kids were little, bedtime was a non-negotiable. Like, we had a bedtime routine. They went to bed every night at 7 o'clock. I would never leave my house past 6:30. I was very, very diligent about it. And so sometimes I would speak to parents and they would say, oh, my kid doesn't even sleep in his own bed. And like, I don't even know when he goes to sleep. And I would be like, great, that's what we need to work on. And the parents like, but it doesn't bother me. I'm fine with that. So, but it's really important to them that their kid, you know, eats healthy foods. So we have to kind of take that bias out of it. And remember that when we're talking to parents and having that conversation, we have to hear about what's important to them and what is going to make the child's life in this parent's house easier, more meaningful, or help support the parents in their goals, and not to put our ideas and our goals into this parent coaching.
I remember one of my very first ABA jobs. I was so excited because we really had this breakthrough with this girl I was working with, and she was so young and she had just started ABA, and she got through gross motor imitation and some following one-step instructions. And I was so excited, and I wanted to show the parents and show them how that they could be doing this as well. And the mom looked at me and I said, yeah, look at this, watch. So you can sit down here and you can say, do this. And then you clap your hands and then you'll, you know, she'll do it for you and what have you. And she looked at me and said, huh. And like the mom didn't implement the program because A, it wasn't a goal for her. And I mean, ultimately the whole thing was she wanted her child to imitate, but that in and of itself wasn't a goal. And B, mom didn't have time in her busy life to run ABA programs and meet a knee at a table. That's not what mom's job was. And looking back 20 some odd years ago, I totally understand that now. And parents shouldn't be running knee-to-knee tabletop ABA programs unless that's what they want to be doing. Yet, you know, you look at, you know, a better example would be something like, you know, you're teaching your learner to request for items within an ABA session. So, you know, every time they want the juice, you make them point to the juice. That's it. That's all. And then they can have the juice. And eventually, you know, you maybe have them verbalize for juice if they can do that. And if you're only doing that within session and parents aren't following through on that, they get juice, they get any of their preferred items or activities without having to do anything, well, then your skill, it's not going to generalize, right? So the point or the verbal that you taught them may not generalize to the natural environment because it's not an expectation of parents. And that should be an expectation of parents if, you know, requesting is a goal, and it should be a goal because it's pretty functional in real life. So making sure that those little concepts can be conveyed to parents and really practicing that over and over and over again.
And remembering that sometimes, you know, parents, like I said, this might be new to them. They have a different life and this is what we do. So sometimes parents can be afraid to ask for help because we might make it seem like everything's great and we totally know how to do everything with your kid and they never misbehave and we're able to teach them how to do all these things. And then the parent might start questioning themselves like, well, how can they, you know, get my child dressed and I can't? How come they can feed my child and I can't? And we don't want that to happen. So remembering to that parents don't have the same, you know, one-to-one environment and controlled setting that we have, keeping that in mind when sharing those kind of things. And also then bringing parents into our world, sharing videos with them if possible, showing them how we do things so that they might be able to see why we're being successful. Well, it's because we are prompting this way, or we have reinforcement available, or we've, you know, controlled certain aspects of the environment. So it's important to bring parents in to how we're being successful with their child so that they can hopefully start to translate some of that stuff to their environment as well.
But setting the parents up for success as well, right? Parents need easy wins. If they see that their child is doing so many things with you and they're not doing anything with them, give them some easy wins. Like, you can't start off with a really hard task and say, well, do this. You know, you want to start off with some things that, you know, the child has probably mastered in the ABA session, or just some practical things they can do in real life that you're seeing in the session. You know, for instance, communication temptations, things that, you know, they're, you know, setting up for requesting, you know, hey, parent, you know, the child now knows how to ask for different types of things. So maybe when you're sitting on the couch, you know, and you're sitting watching that movie and you're having some popcorn, take the bowl of popcorn and have it all to yourself and have a little bit. And then pause and wait and see if your child actually, you know, reaches for the popcorn or points or says popcorn. And you know that the child can do this. So showing the parent something like that, because it's practical for them, is really great.
And if that's what you're working on with the parent, let's say communication at home was going to be a goal, a really great way to get parents on board is using something like behavioral skills training. If we're going to practice creating these communication temptations, then use those steps. Explain to them why it's so important, why we have to contrive those situations for kids to request, right? Not all of our kids does it come naturally for. So we're going to teach it. And communication is so important because it's how they're going to get their needs met, and it reduces behavior. What all of that information. Then you're going to model or show them what it looks like. You're going to have them practice and give them feedback and try that again. And the other important point is that we have to consider parents' reinforcement. There is so much negative reinforcement involved, right? It's so much easier to not listen to our kid cry and, you know, give them the candy, or not enforce bedtime and just let them stay up because it's so much easier. And for all of us in parenting, we have that, trust me. And so let's acknowledge it. And so if we think about almost like an ACT model, like what are the things that are getting in the way of a parent accomplishing some of their goals, we have to tap into what is becoming, you know, a negative reinforcement, how we can counter it. What other reinforcement could we offer? Is getting a small win going to be reinforcing enough? Is taking data on their own behavior or their child's behavior going to be reinforcing? Or maybe it's just checking in with you and you giving them like that really, you know, you're doing a really great job and validating them. That might be reinforcing. So knowing and understanding what the parent's motivation is, both in what's keeping them from accomplishing their goals and also what they might need to push them a little bit further, is going to be really helpful.
Giving examples, I mean, we'd already talked about that, but giving real life examples, but not only that, showing them through the behavior skills model. But then when you're doing it in therapy, take some video if you can, you know, or I usually take the child's iPad so that it's not on my own personal phone, but, you know, taking the child's iPad and having a video of a few different skills that the child's learning. So for instance, you know, having a child who's just recently learned how to brush his teeth or tie his shoes or wash his hands, you know, doing that and videoing it so that the parents can see, hey, look, here's the way I prompt, or here's what the child can do independently, and here's where I need to step in. Here's what you can say before and after the task. And, you know, sometimes it's just enough for the parents to see that video and go, oh, cool, my child can do that. I should expect more.
And I also like to start small when I'm working with parents. Sometimes parents will come to me with, you know, a real challenge, and it's really affecting their lives. And everyone wants a quick and easy solution. Unfortunately, most things that we do, slow and steady is going to be the solution, which is sometimes hard to hear. So what I try to do with parents is we try to shape their behavior. So start with something small. So that something small might be for the first week, collect some data. It could be, it doesn't have to be on a complex data sheet. It could be something that you jot down in your phone, or make tallies on the calendar, something that could be really doable. You figure that out with the parent as well, to what's doable, because you want to shape the behavior of doing small things towards your goal every single week. Because even though you might know what the long-term solution is, and they might need to put in some sort of, you know, functional consequence or a functional reinforcement system, that might be really overwhelming to tell them in one session. So you start small, give them one little thing to do, reinforce that with whatever you find is their reinforcement, whether it's that praise or that motivation or something else, the data, and continue to shape their behavior in small ways.
Before you even do this, we probably should have mentioned this from the beginning, but build rapport. As you were saying, you know, start small and, you know, progress on that. The very first thing that needs to come into play is building that rapport. You know, we pair with our students all the time, but we need to pair with parents, and we need to have parents trust us. So, you know, it's a lot for parents to welcome people into their home or to drop their child off at a center. So, you know, really making sure that you build that relationship with parents before you start training or as you're training. A lot of the time I smile a lot when I'm giving parents feedback, when I'm trying to coach parents, I get down to their level. I talk to them about goal setting and what they want to see as goals, and then starting that small stepwise approach. And when we're talking about, you know, building rapport, talking to parents about their goals, some parents I have say, you know, I want to do this and I want to do this and I want to do this and I want to do this. Back to Shira's point about starting small, I would pick 1 to 2 doable goals. So when parents say, I want to do these 20 things and I want to do this, you know, focus them. Okay, I think those goals are really great. You know what? They're very practical, but let's start with 1. Let's start with 2. let's set ourselves up for success. What is the most doable right now?
And if I could add one tip, it is to leave your computer at work, like really engage, be there, be present. I know it might be hard to then catch up later, but in part of building that relationship and feeling like they're on your team, you need to be able to really be present and be compassionate and build that relationship and take away that judgment. You know, like we're not judging what the parents' goals may or may not be, what's going on in the home, but we want to just really learn to be supportive.
And people talk about, you know, the research and stuff talks about being compassionate. And, you know, when I think about compassionate, I sometimes think about empathy and like, oh, poor you. And definitely be compassionate in the fact that, hey, I understand you're juggling with a whole bunch of things. And I understand that you're doing this and you're doing that. But don't take on that, oh, poor you, woe is me approach. Take on more so of a, hey, you know what? I am not going to judge you and I'm not going to judge your lifestyle. I'm here to help you. And I understand there are some barriers to some of these things I'm telling you. So let's even talk about those barriers and say, what do we need to make this happen? What types of things can you do? What is doable for you? And meeting parents where they're at.
In summary today, we discussed why parent coaching is important. And we gave some tips on how to implement parent coaching in your practice. We also talked about behavioral skills training. So go and check out our other podcast on that topic.
Thanks for joining today's conversation. Wherever you get your podcast, please go and subscribe, rate and review so others can find out about us too.
For more from How to ABA, including free resources and ABA materials, visit our blog at howtoaba.com and make sure that you're following us on social media for more practical tips and updates.